This is Haunted America with your hosts, Josh Mantello and Al Shepard on Blog Talk Radio. To discuss today's topics, call 646-716-5896. And now, Haunted America with Josh Mantello and Al Shepard.
Good evening, everyone. I just noticed that intro ends awful abruptly. Anyways, welcome to this week's edition of Haunted America Radio, the bipolar paranormal show. And my name is Al Shepard, and I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Josh Mantello. How you doing, Josh?
Yeah, we're hanging in there this week. Can't complain too much. Of course, nobody ever listens anyways. There's a few people listening now, maybe, but it's...
Yep, don't do any good to moan, because we'll just turn you off. Coming up the bottom of the hour... we'll have a guest, John Cordham, who's the founder of the Cordham Technique for Medical Assessment. He's also a residential trainer at the Monroe Institute for the last 10 years. If you joined us a few weeks back, we had Paul Rademacher, the executive director of the Monroe Institute, on. So we're going to talk to John some more about that and his trips around the world, paranormal trips. Just got back from Dubai, so we'll be speaking with him then. But for the first half an hour, we'll prove why we're the bipolar radio show. What do you got going on, Josh?
Same old stuff, different week, same old, plugging away at the same old thing. Kind of want to say, though, I mean, we're definitely doing something at the Houghton Mansion on Halloween night. We're not 100% sure of what it'll all be, but we'll let you know.
All right, that's good. And, of course, you got the big convention coming up at the Equinox. What's that, November 6th and 7th, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we're still here. That's still going on, Equinox, November 6th and 7th. Everything should be going live with that Tuesday or Wednesday. I've been talking with them all day Friday and Saturday, getting the last bit of details ironed out. The webpage for them is built, the package price is built, all my pricing is built. All that's waiting on now is the PayPal account to finish setting up. And for those of you who use PayPal, know it takes 2 or 3 days for PayPal to become active and work, so I'm just waiting on that little grace period, which will probably take us to Monday or Tuesday. And at the same time, they'll have their pricing set and built, and their webpage will go live. My webpage at jamieantelloevents.com is already been changed around with the pricing and the information for the room rate. That's all changed around. So Tuesday or Wednesday, that will go back out live and be republished, and everything should hit the ground running from there. Also, Friday, I got a chance to talk with Ron Kolick. He's excited about it. He's still going up and going to be there, but he's also going to do something with us on Halloween weekend up here at the Houghton Mansion. So a lot of fun things happening. You know, this for all of us here in the paranormal world, you know, this is like our Christmas right here. This is our moneymaker. This is our time in the spotlight. You know, everybody kind of, you know, all the normal people in the world kind of ignore us ghost people 10 months out of the year, and you know, all of a sudden now, you know, everybody wants to talk to us and hear our ghost stories and all our crazy adventures now. So we bask in the limelight for a couple months before we're pushed to the side for caroling and Christmas trees.
Before you're relegated back to the bowels of the insane.
Yep.
All of a sudden, you're not insane for 2 months out of the year, but the rest of the year, you're a little different.
is the one time of year that, you know, the local newspapers will call you for, and the TV stations will call you for, you know, their quick little, you know, human interest stories of the time of the year, and we'll all get, you know, our 15 minutes of, well, not even 15 minutes, you know, the local TV, we get about 2 minutes of fame, and you know, we delegate our 15 out over a couple of years, I guess, but this is, you know, our, for, you know, and I'm sure most, all the paranormal groups get this, you know, this time of year is when everybody's calling them, and, you know, looking for something to do, or for me with the Houghton Mansion, everybody's calling and asking, oh, what's going on Halloween, what's going on here? Same old stuff as every other month, but this month is when everybody's interested.
Well, like you said, take it when you can get it, you know?
Yeah, I'm not complaining, but come the second, third week of November, it starts getting old, and I think a lot of groups you see almost kind of take a little bit of a vacation.
Well, it was funny, because at the AM station, local AM station that I work at, we had next week's guest, Kelly Ballard. She was on a show on that station Friday, and I was outside just taking a break, and the executive director comes out, and he goes, did you hear what she just said? I said, no. She's an animal psychic. She talks to animals. I said, oh, really? Because I suppose I shouldn't say anything, you know. I guess anything's possible. So he goes back and he sits at his desk. I followed him in. I said, pay attention for the next hour and see how many times that telephone rings during her show. And she was doing live readings, and that phone rang off the hook for the whole next hour. I said, there, what do you got to say about it now? And he didn't say a word. It's like the most popular show on the whole station.
Yeah. Oh, it is. People love it. You know, it comes and goes, you know. Yeah, it's tough to sell ghost things during the Christmas season or in, you know, the springtime. And it's kind of July, August, things start kind of turning back towards the, maybe as the nip starts getting in the air and, you know, the nights get cooler, people start thinking more about ghosts. I don't know, the days get shorter and the nights get longer. And I don't know, it's my favorite time of year.
Yeah, summer's my favorite time of year. I don't like cold whatsoever, or even a little bit of a hint of it. I'd rather sit around and sweat. So, summer's my time.
These next 2 months are the best time.
Yeah, well, obviously you've never vacationed at a nude resort.
No, I can't say I have.
Oh, man. I've been busy all week, like with my send-out cards business. It seems like people are just coming out of the woodwork on Facebook and my yearbook and everything and asking me, you know, what do you do? And so I've been kind of walking them through that and showing them that. And then in my spare time, because of my Bennington Rocks radio show, which plays unsigned music artists, I've had a few artists that I've been kind of trying to help get it break into the business, which led me to networking with some country songwriters, which led me to taking a little bit of a stab at country songwriting. I wrote about a dozen songs, and I actually found a guy, Nick Cross, to record a couple of them. And I got an email today that this woman wants to feature one of them on her her country showcase. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, that's actually pretty cool. I wouldn't be ashamed of that. That's not too many people get songs they wrote written and sang.
Yeah. So I told you I had something freaky for you, so I'm gonna take a minute. I'm gonna play it for you, and you give me your opinion of it when it's done.
Every year it happens exactly at this time. They appear from out of nowhere, come here to spend their dime. There's lots
I do.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. I'm not a big country fan myself, but, you know, it works out pretty, sounds pretty good.
Oh, I had a few people tell me that should be the New England National Anthem. And another guy wanted me to explain. Says, what have they done? Why did they need shooting? I said, just because. If you don't know why, then you never will. You just don't understand. Oh, anyway. How's your job going?
It's a job. A job ain't nothing but work. Is that a country song?
Well, actually, I did. I stumbled on a guy who wrote a reply, if you know the song, Take This Job and Shove It. Well, he wrote a reply as much in this. Take your job and shove it over here because I could use it.
Yeah, no kidding. There's a lot of people saying that nowadays. Unfortunately, I can't. There's no jobs to be a professional ghost hunter. I could go by.
No. Well, we discussed that last week, though. You know, you can be a specialist and be a professional in your field. Paranormal photography professional specialist.
No, remember, we aren't specialists.
I couldn't remember exactly where we left off last week. If we decided there was such a thing as a specialist, or there wasn't.
Let's see. You can be the, we're specialists in the field of bipolar radio.
That we are. That we have down. We have down pat. No problem. For those listening, coming up on the hour, John Cordham from the a couple of his websites, johncordham.com, youparanormal, that's youparanormal.com, and he's the creator of the Cordham technique, a medical assessment technique, which we're going to ask him about. So, what are we going to talk about for the next 15 minutes or so till he comes on?
15 minutes? Oh boy, that's a long time. Anyway, I bet you, I wonder if anybody would listen if we just sat here and were quiet for 5-10 minutes.
Well, that reminds me of if you ever seen Howie Mandel's stage show, you know, where a guy goes to the bathroom and then he just looks at the audience and he goes, "Okay, everybody hide."
Yep, I did see that.
We could all just hide here. Oh,
I had something on my mind, too, earlier in the day I wanted to bring up, and I can't remember quite what it was. Yeah, I had one of those days. I got distracted by the Patriots loss and everything else I forgot about.
Oh, geez. That's pretty bad when a football team totally changes your life.
Yeah. Well, it didn't change my life, but it didn't make me happy.
Well, it's a little early for me to do my shameless self-promotional commercials, because I just did my shameless self-promotional song. So
I know. We're gonna have to interrupt our guest for a few minutes and do it. What's our lineup for the next couple of weeks here? We have a couple guests coming up over the next week or two here also.
Oh, we got some good guests. Next week is Kelly Ballard. She's a fourth generation psychic and intuitive, and I found out that she also has some animal psychic abilities, and we're going to have fun with her. She's got one of her, I believe one of her proteges is going to be calling in with her, so we're getting two for the price of one, actually.
Yeah, she really don't pay anything. That's really good.
Exactly, yeah. I told her I'd split the pay between the both of them. She just finished up with a fairy workshop where you could learn how to commune with fairies, how to build fairy houses in your yard to attract them and things like that. So I'm going to ask her about that.
They're interesting. I've seen one of those once before. I didn't partake in it, but it was at a conference I was speaking at. They did a fairy demonstration, and I think a little bit of a workshop where they pretty much describe what you're talking about now with the stuff like that. Almost kind of like what I was talking about a little bit last week, where you know finding your totem animal. They would also do your fairy and another thing. I might have to ask her about it, and if maybe you've ever heard of it. Ever seen the machines that'll view your aura and stuff like that? Has she ever do anything like that?
Yeah, that I don't know. I have seen those machines. I've seen some pictures, photography of showing your aura and stuff. And I saw one episode of Ghost Hunters there where they had the infrared camera on Jason when he was getting a reading from a psychic. And it's almost like you could see the colors coming from the psychic's mind and just stretching right out across to him. It was really weird.
Yeah, this one was the one. This one machine is a you put your hand on it like almost like a palm reader. It's like a palm reader, and it read your energy or something like that, and did that. And it read your energy somehow and showed your color.
Huh, that's weird. No, I haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah.
Coming up a couple weeks after that, we have, on October 11th, the author of the Ghost of Gettysburg series, Mark Nesbitt. He was a National Park Service ranger at Gettysburg for years, and then he's written I don't know how many books on the Civil War. but I think his most popular is the Ghosts of Gettysburg series. He also founded the Candlelight Walking Tours, Ghosts of Gettysburg, which was rated the number one walking tour in the world for 2009. And he's bringing with him Patty Wilson and Scott Crown over. I believe they're both co-founders of the, I think it's GRF, Ghost Research Foundation, I think, paranormal group. They're both authors. Scott has perfected some technique for listening to EVPs in real time, so all kinds of questions to ask those three, so that's going to be a really great show, I believe.
Yeah, that sounds like it's going to be really interesting.
I know Mark's his Ghost of Gettysburg books, I just love to hear the different stories and stuff that he comes up with that he puts in those books of true encounters with ghosts and stuff at Gettysburg. And, you know, not just one or two ghosts. There's been stories of whole units of phantom ghosts showing up. And search around on the internet, you can find video of soldiers going through the woods at the Triangular Field, and things like that have been caught on camera, and just all kinds of things. So I can't wait to get him on here and start talking to him about some of that stuff. I've been to Gettysburg once, but it was quick. I was only there a couple days, and you really need a week to see everything. So
I say this every time we bring it up. Even if you're not into the paranormal, of course, then you probably wouldn't be listening to the show, would they? even if you want to go and go there and spend a little bit of the time on the paranormal, that's a beautiful country out there, great place. And they've started making it not just, a destination for tourists for the history stuff, but, there's a lot going on now that's tourist-wise for the paranormal and other tourist attractions that are right there in the area. And it is a pretty good close proximity of the capital. You can head right down to Washington at the same time. Beautiful area. I love it down there. You were talking about that with, having whole ghost platoons and companies and out there. It almost makes me wonder, how, if these are conscious spirits, what do they think of what's going on around all the time? Are they still fighting the war in the afterlife? If a ghost of a Union soldier passes a ghost of a Confederate, are they still battling, or is it they know that it's peacetime now between the North and the South mostly, or is it, it makes you kind of wonder what it's like in that other world, if there is one, that between these many spirits of two warring factions.
The Civil War was just weird in itself, because you get whole armies, one on each side, and they're shooting and fighting with each other and everything else, but yet you hear story after story that when the soldiers run into each other one-on-one, they sit down and share coffee or share bread with each other, and talk for a few minutes, and then, okay, time to go back to work. And then they go back to their lines and start shooting at each other again, So it's really weird. And especially at Gettysburg, where you've got reenactors in uniform and stuff showing up, that must really confuse the heck out of them. I mentioned a story there a week or so ago about when they were filming the movie Gettysburg, and the guys are all in their costume and everything, standing by the wood line, and all of a sudden this phantom soldier steps out of the woods and hands him around and then disappears back into the woods again, So it is kind of weird. It would be nice to, be able to interview a spirit and find out what the heck's going on,
Well, maybe we'll have to get all these people we have to get to a communications we got and EVP and all that and have an interview. See if we can get an officer, a colonel or general or something, and people sit down and do an interview with us someday. That should be our goal. I bet you we'd get the most listens on Blog Talk that week if we could say we have a sit down interview with General Lee or something.
Exactly. That'd be so cool. So we've got to work on perfecting the real time communication devices, and maybe Scott Crownover can help us with that. Come up with an idea, or Michael Baker. He was working on a few things too. So we know the right people, or we're going to meet him if we haven't already. And we just got to get all our heads together and figure out this mystery and come up with it. And then that would be so cool just to sit and talk with someone like that.
Now here it would be, you know, kind of for the sake of it, you know, what would your first question be? Would it be a question about the war, or would it be a question about what's the afterlife like? You'd have the historian say, ask them what your battle plan was.
I know a lot of paranormal groups, their first question would be, is that you? Can you do that again?
Yeah.
Is that you?
That's true. I think they'd probably end up, is it still you? Are you still there? Or anyone else you have with you?
That just cracks me up. That's all they ask when they get a chance like that, you know, an opportunity. It's crazy.
Yeah, but you know, because it's almost, I'm guilty of the same thing, and I think anybody listening that is a investigator would probably, you know, I think they'd be lying if they said they don't say those same three words. You know, is that you? I think we've all been down in those into a dark room getting ready for an investigation or conducting the investigation, and we go, okay, can you make your presence known to us? And something happens. The first thing you got to say is that you? Can you do it again? Now, imagine if you were holding that conversation with a live person in front of you. Now you're in a room doing an interview, and all right, can you bang on the wall? And the person's in front of you. They go over and bang on the wall, and they say to him, is that you? Can you do it again? You're talking to maybe a, you know, spirit-wise, something, you know, this person is hundreds of years old, possibly, and you're talking to them like they're three. Is that you? Is that you that really did it? Can you do it again? That's something you'd say to a toddler because you're, you know, good job, you did it once. Can you do it again?
Well, pretend for a minute, pretend you're a blind person talking to someone else. Would you say that when you're having a conversation? And that's the way I look at it, you know. just because you can't see them doesn't mean they're not there, you know. It's like, you know, you walk up and you talk to a blind person, and they're like, who's that? Can you say that again? Who is that?
Yeah.
I don't know. Some of these groups out there just, I don't know.
Oh, maybe, you know, maybe that's why the ghosts don't communicate with
us
as much as we want.
They crack me up with their stupidity.
Yeah, you know, maybe that's why.
We got a caller. We got a caller. I'm going to go jump away here for a second and see who it is.
Why don't you,
be right back.
Run your commercial now? All right. Well, anyways, I'm sure our call.
Haunted America Radio is brought to you by...
Send out cards. One of the most unique, exciting, and fastest growing home-based business opportunities available today. It all revolves around a unique service. Send out cards offers an online system that allows you to log in from anywhere in the world, type a message, and click the send button. The company then actually prints a physical greeting card in your handwriting with your signature and mails it to your recipient in the mailbox. All for under $1. You can even add a gift and have it sent along with your greeting card. It's easy, it's quick, and it's something anybody can do. You can become a customer of Send Out Cards, but you may also select our entrepreneur option, which gives you the ability to participate in our compensation plan and create a residual side income stream for yourself and your family, all while working part-time around your already busy schedule. Try out a free gift account. They'll show you all the cool features of the Send Out Card system, and you can actually send out a few cards yourself. If at that time you still like what you see, Welcome to the Send Out Cards team.
If you'd like more information on this amazing system, visit www.sendoutcardsofvermont.com. That's www.sendoutcardsofvermont.com. Or call Alan at 802-733-5296 today.
And just for those of you listening to that commercial, the website and phone number is no longer valid, but I'm too lazy to make a new commercial. So just go to www.teamshepherd.com or call at 516-422-5379. Joining us right now, we've been eagerly awaiting to catch up with him, is John Cordham. And John, we got my co-host Josh here. You do so many different things. I'm not really sure what to say for an introduction here, so I'm kind of going to let you lead us the way you want to go here. Between your two websites here, you got a resume 10 miles long here.
Oh, well, hey, Josh. Hey, Alan. It's great to meet you as well over the airwaves. And I would say that people talk about a lot about paranormal investigation, but I would say that I'm interested in perceptual investigation. And
okay,
that's what really opens it up to a pretty broad perspective in terms of understanding some of the strange phenomena or unexplained occurrence that happens in our world, and that includes everything from hauntings to ghosts to apparitions to UFOs to contact with deceased relatives, remote viewing and using psychic abilities to use government intelligence gathering. I mean, the applications and pretty endless.
Yeah, that's what we were discussing last week, how there's a couple paranormal groups out there kind of trying to build themselves as specialists, and I was arguing, how can you be a specialist in a field where we don't even know what's right and wrong yet? The average housewife with a Olympus digital recorder has just as much chance to catch that one irrefutable piece of evidence as someone with $20,000 worth of equipment, So, and that's what I love about this field, is it's wide open to about anybody at this point. But the way I came in contact with you was I contacted Skip at the Monroe Institute because I was interested in their Hemisync product, and the first thing I thought was, okay, here's a product to enhance psychic abilities. I said, now that would be a perfect tool in the toolbox of a paranormal investigator. So that's when they pointed me to you, kind of as their paranormal investigative liaison, and then when I got checking out your websites, I realized you're into a whole bunch of other things as well. So so let me just ask you right off quick, like, here, is my theory correct? Can HemiSync enhance a paranormal investigator's abilities to sense things when they're on a case or something?
No, HemiSync can increase awareness or increase your perceptual sensitivities in just about any environment. And that would include, they used HemiSync with the remote viewers during the Stargate program, a few decades ago. They've used HemiSync with healing people, sending healing energies to people that are experiencing health problems or health imbalances. They've used HemiSync in terms of investing applications, if you want to call it intuitive investing. So, I mean, HemiSync just can increase your spectrum of the awareness spectrum. And I just came up with the idea on my own in terms of using this as a way to sensitize people in paranormally active locations to see what would happen. I used to have a program a number of years ago called the Glenwood Experiment, and we would get a bunch of people together that either already had some perceptual sensitivities or were interested in developing those perceptual sensitivities, and then having them, you know, listen to HemiSync and move into paranormally active sites to see what they could detect. So to me, it was very interesting. The results were very compelling and also a lot of fun. I like to have paranormal investigation be interesting and enjoyable as opposed to scary and frightening.
Yeah, exactly. You know, because my thought was that groups, you know, once in a while they bring in a psychic to kind of help them, you know, point them in the right direction, because most of them are only there for a limited time, like one part of one evening for an investigation. And I got thinking, if this product would enhance everybody's psychic abilities on the team, then boy, wouldn't that really be neat to be able to go in with your equipment, set it up, and immediately know which way to point something or something like that, you know?
Yeah, the way that it worked when I conducted the workshop was what I found on my own just during the time when I was doing a lot of paranormal investigating. I don't do as much investigating now as I used to, but there was a time when, you know, I was getting a lot of phone calls. And I would say 9 out of 10 times, Alan, you know, when you go to someone's house, of course they call you on the phone. By the time someone's calling you on the phone, you know, they're kind of at their wit's end. Obviously, there's something more going on than just a bump in the night by the time you're calling someone in for assistance. So they'll call you on the phone and they'll go into detail about, you know, what's been happening, strange odors, strange smells, as you know, temperature differences, feeling cold spots or hot spots, and then it can be very extreme with people saying they're having apparitions or they're hearing voices. So usually there's you know, a long list of symptoms that they'll give you on the phone, and then when you get there, none of that is happening. Okay, so you get there and they go, well, that chair floats, but of course when you get there, the chair's not floating. Now, it's not very practical to move into someone's house and wait for the chair to float. So you've got to be able to go into a paranormally active environment and be able to pick up on what's occurring, even though there's not a paranormal phenomenon occurring in that moment. You know, if you really want to be an effective investigator, that you'd be able to draw on the genre, the ambiance of the location. And what I did with the workshop that I did was I went around the United States and I would pick, you know, very large hotels that were determined to be, either they had a long history of paranormal activity, you know, the hotel management or guests report a lot of strange goings on. I would go to those places and spend a few nights there myself to make sure that the place had the qualities that I was looking for, that it had paranormal activity, so that during the workshop we would have something to work with. Okay, we didn't want to go into a place where nothing was going to happen for people. But all people knew that were going into the workshop, and there would usually be anywhere between 12 and 20 people in the workshop. All they knew was that they were going into a paranormally active site. They weren't told any of the stories. They weren't told that there's the white lady's ghost. You know, they weren't front loaded in any way going into the workshop. They just know they're going to a place that's active. And we would stay there for 5 days, and we would rent a conference room where we could practice techniques and listen to HemiSync in private. And then we could, you know, go out into the hotel and peruse the hallways, go into the rooms, get into the basements. I always made sure that we had unrestricted access when we went to some of these places. And allowed people just to perceive what they perceived, you know, and keeping a diary of the rooms where there was temperature changes, the rooms where they smelled certain aromas, if they were, what was happening in their dreams at night when they were in the location. You know, there were occurrences where people did see apparitions, and they could describe the people in terms of the period of clothing that they were wearing. And then at the end of the program, I would bring in a historian, someone who knew the hotel very well, someone who knew where you know, the mysterious things happen, or possibly a murder at one time, and then people receive feedback on their perceptions while they were there. So to me, it was just a really dynamic process of educating people about how to become more sensitive to their perception and then get feedback in real time as they were investigating.
Yeah. Now, during all those, did they use any form of the more, technical equipment? You know, were they using the temperature gauges, EMF meters, or trying to do like maybe EVPs at the same time, anything like that?
Well, what we did do was some. I usually don't work with any of those devices, either when I'm working on an investigation or when I'm teaching people, because I want people to be able to rely on their natural sensory skills so that they can switch into investigator, you know, out there in the world at any time as necessary. If the quality of your investigation is tied to gadgets and then you don't have them with you, and you're kind of disempowered. What we noticed was people would be using their hands and feeling differences in temperature, but then we would use these devices and the devices didn't show anything. And so then it comes down to, well, do I trust what I'm experiencing, or do I turn my experience over to what a device says? When you're working with electromagnetic field readers, before you can say that a particular measurement means something, and I'm really not sure, you know, how they've calibrated what the ghost numbers are that, you know, say there's a ghost there, you would have to go into an environment and get a baseline reading of its electromagnetic field when there was nothing happening, and then when there's a difference in that electromagnetic field would indicate that something shifted and maybe there's some paranormal presence. But when you're doing a workshop where there's 300,000 square feet of structure to investigate, it would take several weeks to establish a baseline of EMF. And then, you know, chance, if you're in the right place at the right time during the investigation, when something does occur, that your device would pick it up. So we didn't really rely on devices very much. We worked more with the human element and using HemiSync and some techniques as a way of investigating the property.
Yeah, I mean, and that does make sense. You want to try not to almost lead people into thinking there's something there prematurely by saying a device is telling you it's there.
You know, and I'm, you know, the jury's still out for me on the EMF approach, because if our current understanding says that we are embodied spirits, and that, you know, ghosts or apparition are disembodied spirits, then we as embodied spirits would still generate an electromagnetic field. So the device would be picking up on us as well as a disembodied spirit. So unless you're saying that then there's a conversion, you know, an actual, you know, conversion of electromagnetic activity when someone dies, then you're opening up a whole other can of worms about, well, is death an electronic process? I mean, so I'm still not sure exactly about the efficacy of electromagnetic field gadgets. I know that there's a lot, they reach a lot of popular appeal, and they're used on a lot of television shows that you see now. But I'm still not certain about what information they actually provide. If you guys know, you know, information, I'd be interested to hear, especially if you know what range on the EMF is the ghost range. I'd be curious.
Yeah.
As opposed to being near an electrical outlet or something.
Yeah, unfortunately, I mean, nobody really knows. And you are right. I think a lot of us, you know, and I come from that kind of scientific side of things. When I investigate, I try to, I'm more of the equipment, technical type of person, but unlike a lot of other technical equipment type groups, I am not closed-minded to all the other aspects of this. I I fully understand that what I'm doing is just a shot in the dark a lot of times. And with that EMF stuff, there isn't a set zone. People have been experimenting it with for years. And the only, you mentioned ranges, there isn't one. And I think what most groups do is look more for a fluctuation in what is the norm of a room than a certain range. For instance, the best way to think of it is a cemetery with no power lines, no outlets, no sockets, light switches, is zero. So anything above zero should be something. But a room would have a baseline of two. So if you get a four somewhere, you can't trace it to a outlet or a socket or light, whatever, etc., then that's something. But again, it's more guesswork. And my big thing is you have to back it up with something else. No one thing is the proof. That alone is the proof, but that with an EVP, with maybe a psychic saying something, you have to build the puzzle, and you can't build a puzzle with just one piece. So solely the EMF isn't the whole puzzle, and solely just the psychic saying isn't one. For me, it's building the puzzle, all of it together, to look at the picture of what the paranormal activity is.
Yeah, and I'd be curious.
You know me.
Excuse me?
I was just gonna say, Josh knows me. I like to play devil's advocate, so I could say that the Earth naturally gives off has an electromagnetic field, and it wouldn't be beyond the realm of possibility to be standing out in the middle of an open field and get a reading, in my opinion. And the same thing with what you were saying, John, that a living body giving off an electromagnetic field, then I suppose I could maybe make the argument that our body itself, the container that spirit is contained in, might be acting as an insulator, and that's where you wouldn't get a reading off a living person, but you'd get one on a disembodied one.
Oh, there are meters, though, that do actually trigger and read off the electrical impulses of our nerve system. They cost about $400 a piece, but they are there.
And they pick up on the electric,
go ahead, John.
Electric impulses of a person. Is that what you said, Josh?
Yeah, they're called tri-field meters. They run about between $300 and $400, depending on where you purchase them. But to properly operate it, you have to be away from it, because a move of your finger will trigger it. The electrical impulses of your nerves, and moving the finger will actually trigger the device. It's very sensitive to even that low of electricity or EMF. They are out there, but it's all relative to the same thing. That's just one small piece, and we really don't know EMF. Like Al said, the Earth naturally emits it. We could be all standing around thinking we're in a ghost when we're actually it's a naturally occurring phenomenon that happens around the world sporadically for no explanation, just like volcanoes erupt sporadically. It doesn't mean it's a ghost, so.
Yeah, and then with the temperature gauges, the ones I've seen, they're kind of like a gun. It's like a temperature gauge gun, and the ones I've seen on the web, they're not too terribly expensive. But my understanding of how that, shooting a kind of a beam or laser beam, I'll expose my ignorance and say I'm not exactly sure, how the device functions. But it's my understanding that if it is some kind of a temperature sensing device that shoots a beam, that what the surface that it's going to measure is the wall on the other side of the room. It's going to measure where that beam hits a surface. And so if there is a mist or a vapor in the middle of the room that's generating heat, that device isn't going to detect it, because it's designed to detect surface temperature of matter.
You're absolutely right. A lot of those guns and that people are using, they actually measure surface temperature, and 80% of the groups I've seen misuse them. The best way to really do it is there are a few out there that have the surface temperature reading, and then there's a small probe that does ambient or air temperature, and it samples at a very high rate, so it actually changes it. It samples the air temperature every quarter of a second, half a second. That's what you technically should be using, is something that does the ambient air temperature. But we're kind of getting away from our whole...
Well, and I do understand that people want to bring science to, you know, the unexplained. That we want to, you know, as human beings, we're just very curious. And I would say that this realm of the paranormal has captivated our interest, you know, throughout human history. You know, everybody loves a good mystery. And if we can lift the veil on these secrets and explain what's actually happening, you know, that has value. And I understand why people use the devices as a way of bringing that science to paranormal investigation. What I found when I was, you know, in the earlier days of investigating, if I was called to someone's house and they wanted me to explain what was going on, if I came over and then, you know, walked around and had a device and then, look, the needle's moving. You know, their response was, well, we know that. That's why we called you. Like, we already know that. Like, you're not telling us or showing us anything we don't know. Do something about it, will you? You know? So,
yeah.
But it wasn't really, useful in terms of certainly easing people's tension. Because I would also say by the time they're calling someone in, you know, there's some angst going on. They're probably not enjoying whatever the paranormal phenomenon is because for someone like me, you know, I'm so interested in the whole idea. You know, I made sure I bought a house, an old house that had unusual feelings to it. But to me, it's been very positive.
Right.
And so in those situations, people aren't, you know, normally calling in an investigator to cease, you know, positive strange occurrence. Usually
right.
It's undesirable or what they might perceive as spooky. And then you get into another, can of worms and, you know, how we've been conditioned to perceive paranormal phenomena. I think that our bodies are a natural instrument to detecting extrasensory occurrence, and so everybody's had the experience, or most everybody's had the experience of being in a place that felt a little odd, and you felt the hair standing up on the back of your neck. And I would say that, you know, Hollywood movie has conditioned us to, like, uh-oh, this is scary, this is bad, run. Where this might be an indication that an apparition or a non-physical presence is about to apparate and show itself and communicate and offer answers, but we miss those opportunities because we flee.
Right. No, I think I know one thing. It's frustrating for me. You know, the way I operate, my group. You know, we're, like I was just saying, scientific, technical. We a lot of times can't provide the answers people are looking for. I think, you know, that our aspect does have a purpose, you know, more for the documentation part. But when it comes to the actually providing a service of help to people and giving them answers, a lot of times when the groups like mine that go in gung-ho scientific documentation can't provide those answers. I had a case recently where it fell through the cracks and we never got a chance to go there. Where the person was scared in her house and they just really wanted whatever was gone. I explained to her that's kind of not what I do. I still consulted with her, but I had brought in another group, a group of people who are more of the in-tune communication type of group. You know, and I think a lot of us in my side of things have a hard time really accepting the fact and just passing the ball and saying, okay, we're supposed to be service-based. We're supposed to be helping people get answers, not just being self-fulfilling and getting our EVPs, you know. And I think, you know, what you were just talking about, how you did things and, how, you know, more helping instead of just going in self-serving for the purpose of getting a picture and EVP to put on our webpage.
I think we've said that on here a few times, is that most groups are out there just looking to document the existence, and they're self-serving. They have no experience in cleansing a house or getting rid of what's in there. They're just excited as heck to prove that it's there and be able to post it on their website.
Yes, and
anybody?
I would say that you know, is important, and I have yet to see anything on the web, even in the advent of YouTube and all these other, you know, and now with our handheld video technology, and then you can, you know, broadcast it to the world within 30 minutes, you know, or in real time probably at this point. I am still surprised that we're not seeing more legitimate or credible video, unless I just haven't found those sites, but I've certainly had my share of going to YouTube and, you know, taking the bait on real live actual ghost footage, you know, as the title of the video, and you click on it and it's very ambiguous and I'm not sure what that was, and I think the cameraman kind of took a picture of the wall, and then you heard some, you know, for some reason when people do paranormal investigation, it causes human beings to explode with profanity. I think it's very interesting. Because they're going, oh, golly, what was that? But I'm not seeing anything. Unless you guys can, you know, lead me to some sites that have some really compelling video. I've yet to be convinced by anything I've seen on the Internet.
Not us, because that's what we've said all along, is this is a wide open field because nobody has evidence yet, and nobody even knows the right way to collect any evidence yet. And that's the whole reason why this field intrigues me. I mean, now Josh is an investigator. He's formed his own paranormal group, and I'm just someone with an interest. I became interested after reading Sarah Estep's book on how she just sat down twice a day in her office for 10 minutes at a time and actually spoke with spirits that have crossed over. You know, I'm not so much interested in the ones that haunt a house. I'm interested in over there, you know. So there, we don't even know the right way to capture evidence. We don't even know if video cameras will pick them up or not. It's just a shot in the dark.
Well, also what I found too was that you know, people would call and they would say, you know, strange stuff is going on at the house. And, you know, my husband or my wife, who never has headaches, is all of a sudden having headaches. And, you know, they would say that, you know, the children are reporting seeing apparitions, but the adults aren't seeing apparitions. I mean, it was always kind of a mixed bag when you had a family investigation going on. But what I notice is when I've gone out there, you know, in my own experience, whenever I've gone, you know, since I've had an opportunity to go to Europe and go to castles and places that have a lot of paranormal activity, you know, you really can't hide it. When you walk into a place that's got a lot of activity, I mean, it's just palpable. And so I get these phone calls and I'd go to these houses, and based on these symptoms, I really would expect to have a, you know, a overwhelming tactile sensation when I got there, and I would get there and I would say, you know, there's nothing going on here at all, but I can't tell the people that, because then it feels like, you know, you're discounting what they're saying. They're obviously very upset and they're, you know, in crisis, and so you need to be sensitive to that. You can't tell them that, you know, there's nothing going on and they're, you know, don't know what they're talking about. That's not going to work very well. What I noticed was that earth energies, what I would call earth energies, were giving faux haunting symptoms in a house. And what I mean by that is, if you look at, you know, acupuncture, or in Chinese medicine, that the human body has a system of meridians, and by placing needles at certain points in that meridian, you can, you know, induce relief and healing. And what I found is, you know, the earth has meridians as well. Now we're getting into Stonehenge and monolith and standing stones. Some of the theories are that the standing stones were left in place to indicate where those meridians run. But to bring it forward to paranormal phenomenon, if you have a house that has a ley line or intersection of ley lines or these meridians underneath the property, it can cause, you know, people experience sinus pressure when they're working with meridians that have certain qualities in the earth. This one particular house I was working on, there was, you know, underground water, which is different than well water. If you've got underground rivers or geothermal water like hot springs, they had ley lines running through the property, and then they had those very tall Iron Man electrical wire, you know, huge power supply lines that look like big Iron Men. That's what I call them. All going on at this property at the same time, which just created a very chaotic atmosphere. And I would say for, you know, those people, they were being stimulated by the electricity, by the ley lines, by the underground water. And to them, you know, they perceived it as the house was haunted because it had a negative, dense, heavy feeling, and people were associating it with a lot of headaches.
Okay, mentioning you traveling around the world, as long as we touched on that subject, I seen your videos where you're rolling your dice and deciding where you're going next. When you go to all these places, what exactly are you looking for?
Well, I just like to have some fun with what I'm doing now, Alan, in terms of showing people that basically, you know, there's paranormal activity just about everywhere you go. You know, whether or not it's a ghost or, you know, a disembodied spirit, if you want to, you know, if you subscribe to that's the explanation. But I would say, you know, just about in any city in the world or any small town in the world, you know, you can find something unusual going on. And my job is just to go to prove that theory in terms of going to these places and see what I can find. Sometimes, you know, I'll find, what people would call a haunted house. Other times I'm interested I'm very interested in Knights Templars, so going to old churches where I can show you the symbolisms that are, you know, in the church, carved in the stones, down in the crypts. I know a lot of people say that, you know, the Knights Templar stuff is a bunch of just hocus pocus, but I would say there's actually some truth in some of the way that architecture has been used. Certainly back then, you know, architecture was the medium of the time, and they put a lot of information and symbolism into art and architecture. So for me, I'm just out there roaming the globe, just seeing what I can find anywhere I go and see where it leads. I really enjoyed that trip to Rome. I thought that was really fun. I was just sitting on the plane flying over, wasn't sure, you know, what I was going to do when I got there, and the gentleman sitting next to me on the plane said, you know, there's the Church of Purgatory where they have evidence of the you know, handprints and fingerprints of the souls that are you know, burned or covered in blood that touched this church, and you can go and see it. And I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. I'll go check it out. And it was true. You know, I went there and they found that church, and they had all this evidence of, you know, what they presented as evidence, but it was tangible. You could touch it, of clothing that had, you know, handprints and fingerprints in old Bibles that I thought it was rather bold of the church to actually have a little, you know, shrine in the church devoted to purgatory. I thought that was pretty cool. I would have thought that most churches would have kept that, you know, under tight lid, if you mean.
Yeah.
I think most of them would. I know Josh is jumping up and down here when you mentioned Knights Templar, because his home base of operations is the Houghton Mansion, which is also a Masonic lodge. So go ahead, Josh.
Oh, no, that's fine. It always perks up. Everybody always associates the old-time Templars with the modern-day Masonry for some reason. Now, with all these movies that have come out and linked the two of them, and I probably know as much about the Templars as everybody else who's watched National Treasure and Angels and Demons and Da Vinci Code and everything in between. So,
but there is a lot of symbolism in a Masonic temple. I mean, I noticed that when you had me down there investigating in there.
Oh yeah, and like he was just saying, you know, that was, you know, like he was just saying, architecture was the medium at the time. in architecture and symbolism within all, you know, the buildings that they built. They carved in the symbolism and the meanings. And one thing I'm going to kind of go back a bit here, like you're just saying, you know, the architecture is a medium of the time, and you're talking about like the lay of the land and energy spots and stuff like that, you know, with the standing stones, and you also got to kind of put in like the pyramids. You know, these weren't, a lot of people kind of subscribe to the theory that these weren't just idle buildings built for nothing. You know, they're put on certain spots to harness energy and to harness it and channel it to either the person inside. You know, and a lot of people, when they go to these, and he's probably been there, I've never been there, so he's probably been there more than I have, you know, have feelings, you know, they can feel the energy inside these locations. Have you been there and felt that, gone into these places and kind of felt the energy there?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, once a place becomes popular, like Stonehenge or Roslyn, you know, then it loses its appeal because, you know, now they've got ropes around Stonehenge, and you just kind of look at it from afar like you're at the zoo, you know, unless there's a special day that they open it up. But it's my understanding, you know, that any Masonic lodge, not only is there architecture and symbolism, but the site is selected for a particular reason. At least some of the main lodges. When you start getting into maybe smaller towns that have lodges, they may be limited in terms of where they can pick to have their lodge.
Right. The bigger lodges, maybe in the original times, possibly. I can tell you the building we're preparing, it is haunted, and people try to link the, you know, it being a haunted house to it somehow being a Masonic lodge, and the two somehow have, you know, created that. Yeah, it's not really the truth, at least I don't think it is. But the one thing that is true is all lodges are situated east to west, like churches. And that's really the only way I can kind of say that is what you're talking about is, our lodge was just given to it. It was a building that we got cheaply almost 100 years ago, and that's why it's where it is. Unless maybe there was some more in the history books of the building I don't know about. You know, I was in the inner circle that purchased the building in the 1920s. So, but one thing is true is they are all built, situated east to west, but so are churches. And it all has to do with, you know, the sun rising in the east and setting in the west. And that's probably, you know, and there is symbols of architecture inside it, because anybody who's joined the fraternity knows that architecture is really kind of the basis of all the symbolism within the fraternity.
I would say that probably the most notable Templar meeting place that I went to, and there's a lot of unknown places out there now that you can go to that don't have ropes around them, you know, that they haven't become Stonehenge or Roslyn. And then having said this, I might open up the gates to my secret places being, you know, turning into the mall. But I would say my most notable place was in England, about an hour north of London by car, in a town called Royston, where it wasn't a lodge, but they call it the Royston Cave, and underneath the town they found a Templar cave from, I think it's around 1100 or 1200 AD. Don't hold me to my dates. But it's a six-sided wall cave. The cave it's almost like a chamber, rather than it's not like a long tunnel, but it's a short tunnel that leads down into a six-sided room, if you will. And there's a lot of carvings on the wall that are more like a collage. They're not organized in cartouches like hieroglyphics or in the Egyptian pyramids. It was much more flowing, and some of the stuff had been chipped out of the wall as though they didn't want you to know what was there at one time, but there's certainly a tremendous amount of information still there. But what's important about this cave to me is that the center of the cave is at the intersection of the ley line that they said was Michael and Mary, or two ley lines intersect in the middle of this cave. And then, you know, one at a time we would go and stand in the middle of the room. And it really had, you know, physical sensations to it that I found rather appealing, rather soothing. And that's why I say that, you know, some of the I mean, even the pagans were working with earth energies, and as you know, Christianity spread through Western Europe and they were demolishing the pagan temples and building churches on top of them, they were actually, you know, taking advantage of those, you know, harvested energies in those places. And I think that, you know, one of the reasons I think there's still a lot of Templar mysteries that hasn't been solved is that no one's really introducing the intuitive component. They're just looking for clues and treasure, you know,
right,
directions and wealth, rather than, you know, moving into what, you know, some of these places might have to offer. And I know that, like, you know, nowadays, like when you go, when you're in Europe or even in America, you know, you might walk into a church and everybody notices a shift in energy when you walk into a church. You know, and I would say that some of that is as a result of the location that the site has been built on, that you're moving into the stimulation of the earth that might, you know, enhance or expand perceptual awareness, and then from there, you know, you can become sensitive to your surroundings. And so why they may be saying the building is haunted, you're talking about the place that you have, is it called the Houghton Mansion,
and that's more based on, you know, there was actual deaths that were involved in the building. But yeah, I mean, if there are ley lines that are there, and I'm now speaking kind of into the back to the spirit afterlife side of things, there are people who really subscribe to the theory that, you know, a place that has that lays along these ley lines at an intersection might be more able to house a haunting or be haunted because of the excess energy that is there. It either traps or allows the spirits to stay longer than they need to, or something along those lines.
Well, yes, I can tell you right now, if you want to go on a weekend and really increase your chances of finding paranormal activity, go to any town that has hot springs. There seems to be a positive correlation between sources of geothermal water and paranormal activity. Now, whether or not the geothermal water causes paranormal activity, or if the geothermal water moves people into a state that's much more sensitive, much more conducive to detecting the paranormal activity that otherwise would go undetected, I'm not sure which it is. It could be both. But, you know, pick any town that's got hot springs and then, you know, load up your car and head there, and all you got to do is walk around and start asking people if they've heard of a haunted house in town, and it should be pretty easy to find, and there's probably several.
You're
yeah,
not too far away, Josh. Don't they have hot springs right there in Williamstown?
No, I don't think those are hot springs. I just think those are natural springs.
Are they?
I don't think we have any hot springs around here. That's just the natural sand spring. But another thing, and I don't know if you've probably heard of this, is limestone. I know a lot of the more popular hauntings, large haunting, you know, of fame, are also somehow situated near limestone deposits. And I know, speaking now into the metaphysical side of things, and a lot of people who use stones for energy and crystals, that limestone actually, you know, has an energy enhancing effect to an area. What do you think about that?
You know, that's something I would need to, I don't know as much about geology, to give a, you know, an educated response, but I would say that all of these things that we're talking about, you know, are possible explanations for what's happening that seem to go really kind of undetected. it's really a lot of emphasis on the scary, the spooky. I think on some level people kind of want to be scared. You know, that could be true.
That's why we go on roller coasters and, you know,
right,
fun houses. You know, there is a element, and I think in the human brain that kind of wants the adrenaline of being scared. So
yeah, so
scary
we, so
to draw.
If we find out there's no ghost, that it's just a rock, then the sensationalism of paranormal investigating will go to the back pages of the newspaper, and something else will move up to the cover.
That's
but
true.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's some very, you know, viable explanations that can be natural in terms of water or geology that can explain this. And people are also, you know, taking a look at sacred geometry in terms of what effect that might have on, you know, anything. And I'm not a sacred geometrist, so don't hold me to you know, expertise here, but, you know, just an example of geometry, you know, there's a reason that the Pentagon is a pentagon, you know, a five-sided shape. My understanding of sacred geometry is more of an aggressive geometric formation. So, of course, your, you know, housing of military and defense would take on an aggressive geometry.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, you know, there's many schools of thought about the different, you know, two-sided, three-sided, four-sided, five-sided, six-sided, seven-sided, eight-sided, nine-sided, you know, it goes on and on, geometric figures and what qualities they promote. So if you've got an old church with a lot of geometry in the architecture with, you know, underground water and limestone and, you know, death has occurred there, you know, you've got a real hot mix for, you know, stimulating activity, I would say. I mean, that's just a recipe for a really good paranormal cake if you got all that going on.
Yeah, exactly.
Speaking of geometry, tell me about this medical assessment technique of yours that I've read a little bit about here. I'm not quite sure I understand it all, but I definitely want to know more.
Well, there's a lot of, I would say, over the last, well, it's actually been going on for a long time where people have been able to use, and I'll use the word intuition for the moment, where people have been able to use intuition as a way of either identifying where illness is located in the body, or using intuition as knowing what kind of remedy might cure the body. That's, you know, that's been going on for a very, very long time. I would say that it wasn't until around the 80s or 90s that it really started getting to become more mainstream. I mean, Edgar Cayce, you know, he was back in the earlier 20th century, and his work is very, very remarkable. If you really look at some of the things that he was able to perceive, it was extraordinary. But you know, only now is, you know, as I would say, you know, Edgar Cayce's becoming more of a household word.
Yeah, he is. I've heard of him a few times and of his work, and yeah, you're absolutely right. The work he was doing, you know, nearly a century ago was incredible. I don't think it's really been duplicated to the level he did it since then.
No, I don't think so. But he went into trance when he would do his thing, and there's many different modes that people use as a way of accessing, you know, these greater realms of information, especially when it comes to you know, diagnosing health. My method is much more matter of fact. I don't go into trance or move into some kind of altered state. You know, I just walking down the street, I you know, perceive, you know, the quality of health in people, and I'm just going about my day. And I'm getting ready to publish a book about the method, and it's also an illustrated guide, so it shows you, you know, what it is that I see when I look at people. So, you know, I'm talking about using my ordinary five senses, but I'm using them in an extraordinary way. So it's not a psychic ability, but it's more about how to cross-blend the five senses that you already have and that you already know how to use as a way of making distinctions that you haven't made before. And back in 2001 is when I approached the healthcare delivery system. I said, okay, look, I've been working on this since I was a kid. So I mean, I've spent about the last 30 years compiling this visual library of what it is when I see people that tells me, you know, which different organ has got an imbalance or there's illness in the formative stages. And will you just let me have access to your patients that you already know what their diagnosis is? Just let me, you know, come to your office. I'll sit with your patients. It only takes a few minutes. I'll just look at them and I'll tell you what I see. And you can, you know, grade me on my test in real time because you already know what they're diagnosed with. And it took me a very long time to find doctors that would actually let me get through those last few sentences that I just said, because a lot of times halfway through they would just say, you know, no way.
Right.
No way are you coming into our office and doing that stuff. So I finally found, an endocrinologist and a nurse practitioner and gestalt therapist in Bethesda that, you know, they were interested in the bigger possibility of medicine. They were like, we just want to see if this guy's for real, you know. So they were like, sure, come on down. And, you know, based on the demonstrations that happened that day, that's when they said, okay, we're going to set up a study. And over the next several months, working with his nurse practitioner, eventually it got to the point where she was like, I want to know how you do this. And so, you know, we started, her and I went to the mall, and I started just walking around and just pointing out to her, you know, that people have different properties. Of course we have, you know, different hair color, different eye color, different body size and weight, but people have other properties. And so over time I've, you know, taught her how to do it. And what's interesting to me is that the human body projects a consistent language. So if I see somebody with a digestive problem or a respiratory problem, it's the same thing that I see in anyone who has that. So it's not unique to each person. So I just kind of came across a Rosetta Stone of health and biology that applies to all people, which is why it's available through ordinary senses rather than moving into some kind of altered state. Because if it's required that you move into trance or altered state, and you need to be very good and very reliable at that, like Edgar Cayce can, you can get really good results. But a lot of the government psychics that worked, you know, on the Stargate program, you know, they had better days than others, because they were using intuition and, you know, mood or you know, just, you know, what's on their mind that day or whatever, unless they're very good at putting all their mind chatter away and focusing to be present in the moment. And there are psychics that are adept at that. But they still did notice with the group of psychics they were working at that there was a range of accuracy that fluctuated when you're purely working from intuition. So if you're using your ordinary five senses, it's a much more reliable base. You know, we all agree when we see the color blue that we're seeing the color blue. Now, we may not see the exact same blue. We don't know that for sure. But, you know, we all point to the color blue and agree that it's blue.
My daughter and I, we get into an argument over something's purple or pink or not. So I've often wondered that if we're all seeing the exact same color or not, or if it's more of a personal thing. You just learn over time that, okay, what I'm seeing right now is considered blue. So that made me wonder. Do you have a name for your book yet?
The book is going to be called The Cordham Technique, An Illustrated Guide to Your Body's Natural Blueprint for Health and Healing.
Now, is that going to be all over all the bookstores and Amazon and every place?
Yeah, it'll be on Amazon. It'll be out. I'll have a link to my site, you know, for my site to purchase the book. I'm going to be I know now having a blog is very popular these days. So I'm going to create a blog for the book. You know, as I'm doing a book tour, I plan to cruise around a lot on my own. And right now what I'm working on is setting up an experiential process. So, you know, if I am doing a book signing, it's not just sitting there doing a book signing, that people can have their own experience of the kinds of sensory enhancement or sensory blending that I'm talking about.
You're kind of like me. You're just into so many different things here. I don't know which one to talk to you about. to the first thing, way back when you mentioned going to hotels and stuff like that, that Josh is holding a paranormal conference up here at the Equinox Resort up here in Manchester, Vermont, which is where Mary Todd Lincoln and her kids spent a summer, and just down the road from Robert Todd Lincoln's house, and supposedly that is haunted by A. Lincoln and his family. So the first thing I thought of way back then was, boy, I'd like to get you there to look around and see what you come up with. So have you been, I don't know, considered, have psychic abilities or something since you were a child, or do you consider that you have psychic abilities, or is this something you've developed, or what?
Well, you know, I usually don't use the P word. I wouldn't say I'm psychic, and then having said that, I would say that all human beings have a capacity for making extraordinary perceptions. You know, that all human beings have a capacity for being psychic. Now, and it's like playing a musical instrument. You know, most people can sit down to a piano and press on the keys and make some noise, and will every human being be Beethoven? You know, and you can go and take piano lessons if you would really like to learn how to develop your piano playing skills, and some people don't need to take lessons. Some people can just sit down at the piano and it comes naturally to them. Other people need much more practice. Some people aren't interested in the piano at all. You know, some people may just simply appreciate the material world of water and rocks, and they're not interested in going beyond that. But I would say that all human beings have a capacity to extend the range of your senses beyond what we currently determine that they can do. So many people would probably look at my youth or what I've done since then with my career and say, oh, he's very psychic or he's very intuitive. But to me, it's just been a matter of making distinctions about what it is that I perceive.
Right. I kind of have to agree with you. Oh, are you still here? No. I have to kind of agree with you know, with what you said. I think everybody is kind of born with that ability. I know a lot of people say how, you know, that being a psychic is passed down through generations. I think it's something that everybody's born with. It's you know, when everybody talks about your animal instinct, I think that's part of it. It's something that's hardwired into the human brain. But I think, given the modern society over the last 100 years or so, people have become conditioned to suppress and hide the feelings and impressions they receive as part of that part of the brain. And it's now only have had it almost nurtured and not have it suppressed through their youth are the ones who now say they possess the ability, where I think everybody truly does.
Yeah, and when you say the word suppressed, too, the reasons can be many. You know, so for some people, you know, this whole idea of being psychic is, you know, considered, you know, bad and wrong and not to do that. And so if you grew up in that household, that's one way of suppressing. But I would say in our standardized culture, you know, we're suppressed and conditioned all the time. And, you know, it's not diabolical suppression. It's just a function of a standardized society. One of my most favorite stories was I was speaking with a gentleman who worked with youth at risk in the Bronx. And he said that what he found working with young people is when children are in the second or third grade, okay, in the classroom, You know, and this could be any classroom, anywhere. And the teacher would hold a quarter up to the class, you know, a coin, and just give the instruction to draw this. And what was very interesting is when children are in, you know, second or third grade, you know, they drew the teacher standing in front of the blackboard with the clock behind the wall and what was written in chalk on the blackboard and all the desks and the teacher's hand. You know, they drew the whole scene. Other children would draw a very detailed picture of the quarter with the ridges and the date on it. You know, they went into tremendous detail. And no two children drew the same picture of the quarter when given the instruction to just draw this. Then when by the time, you know, young people are in the 8th, 9th, or 10th grade, when given the same task where a teacher holds up a coin and says, draw this, all the children will just draw the coin. And that may sound just kind of like an insignificant story or you know, an academic anecdote, but to me, the conditioning on perception is pretty significant.
Well, I think, that's a perfect example. When you're a young child, you see the big picture and you see more and you're taking in more, but over years, you're kind of, you know, maybe the teachers now say, no, I just wanted you to draw this, draw this, draw this, and their vision and their wide openness kind of narrows. So they're going from seeing the whole picture, the whole room, excuse me, and seeing down to just the coin. Another way I like to kind of anecdote it is you take, say, a family or a child born in seclusion, and he grows up, and every day the person would show them a card with a color on it, and for all practical purposes and what we see, that card is red, but they say this card is blue, this card is blue, this card is blue for their entire life until they're 10 years old, 12 years old. And then they release him off into society for the rest of his life. Red is blue to that person, you know, and it always will be. And whatever, that's the way their mind was conditioned. They don't see differently than us. They were just told differently. And I think the same thing when we start talking about kids who could see, or as a young child, you can see more. Maybe that imaginary friend that you had wasn't imaginary. It was a spirit, but you were conditioned. Just like they were saying, this red is blue, it's blue, it's blue. That's your imagination. It's your imagination. Forget about it. Don't think about it. It's just your imagination, to the point where you believe it, and it becomes fact to you.
Or it could be that by the time you're in eighth grade, you've learned that the whole world revolves around money, and that's all you concentrate on.
Yeah, maybe. That too.
Well, you know, and what was interesting is, like the flag of Japan, of the country, you know, it's the white flag with the red circle in the middle. And I would always say, well, why is it just a white flag with a red circle? And they go, well, that's the sun. And from Japan, at their position on the globe, they perceive the sun as red. We draw the sun as yellow. You know, children in grade school, when they draw with the crayons, we draw the sun as yellow or golden. Children there draw the sun as red.
That's weird. I never realized that. I realized it was supposed to be sun on the flag, but I didn't realize that's how they actually saw it. Okay, your book's coming out. Every psychic we've had on here has said that everyone has psychic abilities. Now, and like you said, it's just a matter of training and enhancing them. And I know you've been leading the Gateway Voyage Project at Monroe for quite a few years now. Would you consider, well, obviously you probably would, but I'm assuming that is a great tool to enhance the psychic abilities in just about anybody?
Yes. I mean, if you are interested in having a very powerful week with your own experience of your perceptual capacities, expanded capacities, and at the same time, you know, what I tell people in terms of if you really want to develop your intuitive abilities, you've got to be willing to go into the basement. You've got to be willing to take a look at your own life. And I talk a little bit about this in the book. You know, I've always lived my life from a self-examined point of view or a self-auditing point of view. But I would say that by and large, that, you know, I don't meet a lot of people that really are taking a look at their lives from a self-examined position, how they show up in relationships, how other people perceive them. And even though a lot of people go to the Institute to, you know, become psychic or become more psychic, you know, when I train and some of the trainers that I work with, we really emphasize on taking this expanded awareness within as a way of revealing more of who you are to yourself. You know, just as, you know, when Neo walks into the kitchen of the Matrix and the woman says, you know, sign on the wall says, know thyself. The more that you can know about your own personal resonance, I would say that the greater command you will have of the extension of your resonance through your perception. And
Matrix,
so
I love that movie.
It can be a very full-bodied week. It's not just a week about becoming psychic or knowing what the number on the card is, like Bill Murray in Ghostbusters when he's testing people, you know, to see the card, that you're really taking a look at the totality of self when you're at the gateway for the week. And it's a very remarkable program, and that's why I really enjoy training there and working with people because, you know, I'm really honored to be able to work with people in that regard to stand by and support them as they unfold into their own authenticity and power. And that includes...
Well, I got a little clip here of you at the Monroe Institute here, and I was going to fire that up, and maybe you can explain to us a little bit more about what your experience was.
So if you'll just lift your right knee up, put it down in the bed, and then roll over on your shoulder to your back, that would be terrific.
Wow. This isn't an ordinary water bed, Skip. It seems to have a level of buoyancy.
Yes, you're actually floating in the water because 250 pounds of salt there mixed with the water, and so you're actually floating as though you were floating in a samadhi tank or in a salt lake.
What happens next?
Well, I close the door, and I go turn on the monitor and watch your physiological activity. So I'm backing up to close the door.
Okay, and this is not my first time in the booth, and so I know that Skip is preparing the equipment in the room next door. I'll go ahead and start getting relaxed.
So here is the mixing board where I work with someone that's in the booth here, and it gives me control of all the sounds that they hear and the recordings in the computer. Just rest for a couple of minutes. Just lay back and get as deeply relaxed as you can, and I'll be back to talk to you in just a minute.
What I'm going to do is set the intention that I just allow my perception to be moved to a random point in time and space.
I can see now, John, as you're in the booth here, that your galvanic skin response is
going down as you're sort of calming down there, and your temperature is rising, as we talked about before, when you get more and more relaxed in there.
I get the sensation that I'm moving down in a spiral direction. I can see my feet in front of me. The steps seem very old.
All right, as we're watching this, the temperature has been rising ever since John went into the quiet zone. Notice the top line here is the skin potential voltage, and it's quite stable where the temperature continues to rise on the red line, and out on the bottom, the green line, the galvanic skin response. It's getting lower and lower. It's now quite even, which means he's settling in.
I'm just seeing blocks and shapes, but they don't really mean anything. I'll see if I can readjust my perception.
The green line moving down. Now it's automatically calibrated, but look what's happening. He's warming even more physical relaxation.
Sometimes my perspective is just sideways or upside down. Okay, there. Now I seem to be on a level floor plan of some kind. So I'm looking around. I see furniture and decor on the walls. I seem to be in a rather large location, large room. I see large portraits on the wall, chandeliers.
It's important in these states of consciousness to really become the observer, observing the world around you rather than reacting to the world around you. The blue line still drifting down more and more. Well, let's see how he's doing. And how are you doing, John? How are you feeling?
I feel like I'm in some kind of manor home. Very grand, very large. I can hear voices. So there's activity going on around me.
Okay. Notice how his galvanic skin response didn't jump at all. That's good. He's staying in the observer mode, not being upset by what he's perceiving.
Now I'm moving down a hallway. There's other people. I can see them. They don't seem to be aware of my presence. As I look to my right, I see large portraits. If I were to guess time period, I would say in the 19th or 18th century. Over to my left, more portraits. I can hear voices again. I'm losing the connection. I'm moving back. Oh, okay. Now I'm back in the booth now. I'm back here. Skip. I can feel the headphones on my head again.
When his awareness in the booth came back, his green line GSR came up.
Wow, are you getting all this? You getting this on tape?
Yes, all of which was narrated into the camera microphone so as not to disturb you while you were undergoing this shift. So we have a pretty good record now. I mean, even as I talk to you, your GSR has come up again. It's very nice that the minute you said, well, I'm back in the booth now, the GSR jumped right up saying, whoop, I'm back. So we've got, you know, 5 minutes of much more than 5 minutes of real good readings here.
Really?
So that's probably enough for you to pull something together just tremendously.
It seems like I've only been gone for about 15 seconds.
Yeah, you've been in there a while.
Oh, okay. All right. Come unhook me and I'll get out of the booth.
Okay, I'll just mention quickly that with Skip Atwater on the video with you, and I swear Skip's voice alone could hypnotize anyone, I believe. Can you just kind of explain what you were going through, and did you ever figure out where you went?
Well, I would say, a couple of things here. I wanted to create a video, so if people have maybe heard of them in Roe Institute or have heard of HemiSync, they kind of want to get an idea of what it's like to come to the Institute. Now, in that specific situation, I was working in the lab, which is, you know, it's got all the physiological measuring equipment, and you're in what we call the booth. And so when you come to the gateway, you don't exactly have that same experience, but you do have your own small booth in your room that we call a check unit. And you usually have a roommate, and they also have their own check unit. But I wanted to create a video that would just, you know, show people what you might be able to expect using HemiSync. Now, at the beginning, I'm acting as though, like, I've never done this before. I'm going, well, what's this, and all that, because I'm being the person who's going to the Institute who doesn't know. But, I mean, I've been in that booth many times. And we conducted a session, as you saw, but then I went back and created video to fill in, you know, what I was seeing so that people could follow along with my experience. I would say that most anyone who goes to the Institute could have that kind of experience, that what was happening for me is not unique to me. I am a very visual person when I move into some of these hemi-sync states, so I do, you know, report in terms of what I'm seeing. Do I know where I was? No, I don't have a sense. To me, I was gone for just a very short time. You know, in talking to Skip, he was like, you know, you've been in there for several minutes. To me, a lot of people will often report having an experience of time distortion when they move into some of the what we call focus levels, where they feel like they're there for a very long time and they've only been there for a moment, or they feel like they've only been there for a moment and they've actually been there for a very long time.
Now, are you able, I've heard some of them say that that hemi-sync just helps train you to do this at any time. Now, are you able to do that at any time you want? I mean, just laying in bed at night if you decide, you know, like Bob Monroe was doing, I just want to take a trip, you know?
Yes. I mean, that's what's really very powerful about hemi-sync and the tools is that you're creating, you know, what I would say like a neural familiarity. Like once you can use hemi-sync as a way of identifying your own process of moving into expanded states of awareness. And once you do that, then you can access those states anytime you need. Now, I would say that, of course, people will have a different kind of experience, you know, lying down and closing your eyes and allowing yourself to become deeply relaxed and moving into an altered state, which would produce different kinds of results or a different kind of experience than, say, I'm in a business meeting and I want to access intuition while I'm here in this meeting, but I can't lie down on the floor. You know, I need to be able to access this state while I'm sitting here, you know, at the conference table having a conversation. So, I mean, people will, you know, have some differences in the kinds of experiences they have. But what's important is that once you learn how to move into those experiences in any environment, you can move into them whenever you would like.
Yeah, I can see where that would come in handy. Like you said, if you're at a business meeting trying to get a feeling for how the meeting's going, or maybe if you're a police officer and you pull someone over, it'd be kind of nice to know what's going on in their mind, even in your everyday life, you know, okay, is my significant other cheating on me? What kind of vibes are you getting? You know, I can think of a million and one uses for having an ability like that.
Yeah, I mean, the possibilities really are endless in terms of, you know, how you can use your own natural perception and allowing that natural perception to unfold so that you can create opportunities for yourself in your life.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and of course the ghost investigating, paranormal investigating part of that too is just, what do you think, Josh? You could, that would come in as a handy tool, wouldn't it?
I think it would in a couple aspects. I think one, if you can tune yourself into those levels where you have the ability to sense out a spot in a house better than another. But also, I think there are times when people, I guess, try and dupe you into their house and maybe say it's haunted when it's not, maybe with thoughts of fame and getting their house to be the next one on a TV ghost hunting show or something. And if you have that ability, you might be able to kind of read into them a little bit better. You can keep yourself at a more relaxed state. You're not going to be quite as edgy and jumpy when walking around in the dark of a strange place. That, you know, that can always come in handy. You know, I can think of tons of reasons.
Well, not just intuitive state, but I believe there's some Monroe products that I believe can help you even go beyond that to actually communicate with spirits. So instead of just having an intuition of which room in the house should I go to, you can just simply carry on a conversation and do an interview, maybe.
Maybe.
Have either of you listened to any HemiSync? Have you had the experience?
I haven't yet, no. And I, honestly, I hadn't heard of it until I started doing this show with Al, and we had someone else from the Institute on about a month ago, and that was the first time I had actually heard of it. It did spark my interest, though, quite a bit, and probably once I get some free time up, I will most likely, you know, start looking into it. I've always had an interest in a lot of that, especially the remote viewing side of it. I know remote viewing was kind of wasn't the main objective to it, but remote viewing was always something I was very much into, and when remote viewing was said as kind of this was used to help you get into that state of mind to do remote viewing, that really spiked my interest.
Yeah, you know, and there's a number of ways that you can use the HemiSync. You know, the most common way of using HemiSync is listening to it with headphones on, because it really isolates the sounds in each ear and in each ear, and optimizing the binaural beat technology. What I did in the workshops that I did when we were going with a large group, to me the group dynamic was really important. I didn't want to send people off to their individual rooms lying down with headphones on, because for a number of reasons, because then, you know, once the tape is over, because some people might go very deep and they don't come back necessarily, they don't want to come back when the tape is over, and so how do you call the group back together? And you don't want to go knock on their door in case they're having a contact experience, or they're, you know, you don't want to interrupt something that might be happening for them. So what I would do was, when we would go to the hotel and we had a conference room, so we had a large workspace, and I would just set up a real big sound system with, you know, large speakers at the front of the room, and then the group would sit in an arc or a horseshoe, and I would just play the HemiSync over the speakers as I was giving them instructions and techniques about, you know, how to use your senses this way, how to use your senses that way. So the teaching was stratified. You've got HemiSync going on while you're also practicing skills, and that way it made it much more fun because the group could be together. So if you're considering using HemiSync with your investigative team, Josh, is something to consider. You know, it's probably really good if people practice with HemiSync at home, listening to headphones, but then when you come together, if you can find a way to expose everyone to HemiSync at the same time, and, you know, I think that you'll find that to be, you know, as useful as well.
Hey, I think so. Yeah, absolutely.
You got about 6 minutes left here. What do you got coming up, John? I know you just got back from Dubai. Where are you heading off to? What do you got on your agenda here coming up?
This weekend I'm heading to the Institute to train. And then when I get home, I'm putting the final touches on the book. And then I'll roll the dice again in October and find out where I'm going next.
Is there any continent you haven't been on yet?
You know, I've been to 5 or 7 continents. I haven't been to Antarctica, and I have not been to Africa, although I've come close with the Middle East and the United Arab Emirates and Kuwait, but haven't actually stepped foot on Africa.
Now,
you're just...
Now, when you roll the dice, do you kind of have a place in mind, or do you really just keep it completely, you know, a new adventure? I mean, sometimes you always kind of have something in the back of your head you're hoping for.
Well, you know, I love Paris. So anytime the dice comes up on Paris, I get excited about that. I would say, although it was very interesting to go to Dubai, I really didn't come across anything on my first time there that was notable to create a video about. And again, when you're going into foreign cultures, you know, you do have to be sensitive about paranormal investigation. Not all countries, you know, have the same kind of interest as we do here in the United States. You know, we have all these television shows now. people talk about it. In some cultures, you know, you just don't mess with the deceased. You know, you just don't do that. And so, you know, you've got to be somewhat sensitive. I know when I went down to Brazil, you know, walking into the hotel at that concierge and saying, "Are there any haunted places?" You know, that was okay. I don't know if doing that in a Arabian country would be as well received.
Yeah, probably, especially if you ask for about women ghosts or something. Why don't you give us your website addresses so people can go find out more about you? Because I know we only just touched the surface here of everything you're into and all that.
The website about my health research is my name, johncordum.com, and that's johncordum.com. And I plan to put up a website about the book, so there will be the cordumtechnique.com. And then right now, my paranormal site is uparanormal.com. And at some point in the future, I'm going to be putting up a blog site for that, so that I can, you know, put up the videos so it keeps it fresh. And then right now, you know, on YouTube, if you just Google my name or put my name in the search, it should pull up my videos. But my channel site is JohnnyQuest5 on YouTube.
I always love a Johnny Quest fan. Okay. My daughter was in love with Haji when she was about 5 years old, so. Anyways, I thank you. We got like 2 minutes left here, so I thank you so much for taking time to come on the show. And between having Paul on here a month ago and you here today, I'm really intrigued by the Monroe Institute and HemiSync now, so I'm really going to have to think seriously about checking this out. So I really appreciate you coming on board.
Well, that's great. Yeah, thank you for having me on the show. I really enjoyed it. And you know, and I'm curious to hear what you guys are up to. So, Josh, if you have a website or, you know, you guys do outings or something like that, or, you know, just keep me in the loop.
Absolutely, yeah. Ed Tanning could be some of the stuff I do. I do event planning for, I call it paranormal event planning for people or places, and some of the stuff that I think would be a great addition to it. I always try to keep a mixed bag of things. I have people who train for EVP and EMF and do lectures on it, but I also will bring in people. I've done stuff with shamans who will take people on visions for their totem animal, or Native American healing, or psychics doing reading, you know, little things like that. And I think something like this would be a great new addition to what we do.
Excellent.
All right, and so Josh's website's jmantelloevents.com and berkshireparanormal.com. And me, I've got like 25 websites, so I'm not
yeah, I saw that, Alan.
I'm not even going down the list. My big thing is I truly love my home-based network marketing business, where I send out positive energy every day. I believe I sent you a card reminding you of when our show was, and that's what I love. I just believe in the law of attraction and sending energy out. So,
I saw your music site. I didn't know if I should tell you I play guitar, and I got an '82 Les Paul Custom.
Oh, geez, we're going to have to schedule it for another show just so you can play music. All right, it's about time to get out of here. I want to thank Josh for not falling asleep this week, and thank you again, John, for coming. And this is the Bipolar Paranormal Radio Show, Haunted America Radio. We'll be back here next week, same place, 7 p.m. to 9. And keep watching J. Mantello Events for the big conference coming. Bye-bye.
Okay.